You're listening to World Class from the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford University. We bring international expertise from Stanford's campus straight to you. The 2016 election was just the beginning. From Macedonian teenagers selling fake news to foreign governments hacking our electoral systems, technological threats are only increasing, and U.S. security forces are woefully unequipped to respond. Paul Stockton, the managing director of Sonicon, tells us how cyber attacks can hurt Americans and how private sector expertise can help us stay ahead.
Thanks to all of you for being here today, and special thanks to Dr. Kerr. I think you're an ideal discussant for me, and I'm hoping amongst the other things you'll bring to the table is understanding how Russian information operations against the near abroad, especially Ukraine, help us understand the challenge that we're facing potentially here in the United States. I know a number of you have to leave a little bit early today for various reasons, so let me give you my bottom line up front right now. There's a growing risk that if potential adversaries like Russia launch cyber attacks against the U.S. power grid, they'll also employ information warfare in order to magnify the effects of those attacks, especially in the political dimensions that'll be most important in a crisis. The United States is utterly unprepared to defend itself against such attacks. There are halting, pathetic efforts underway today to respond to a Russian attacks on the U.S. electoral system. Halting and pathetic. But those steps look great compared to us our preparedness against the possibility of information operations in the context of a cyber attack on the U.S. power grid or other critical infrastructure. There are two reasons why we're so far behind. Two deeper challenges that I'm hoping we can address today. First of all, we've underconceptualized the nature of cyber warfare. We've forgotten that at the essence of warfare, including cyber warfare, Russia or other potential adversaries are going to have political goals, and they're going to craft those cyber attacks accordingly, supported by information operations. Secondly, there's a lack of vision about how industry can contribute, indeed must contribute, to national security in the information age. We've traditionally viewed the federal government as responsible for defending the nation. Folks, that is so over. Power companies are on the front lines of defending the United States today. So is Facebook, Google, so is Twitter. And we need to understand this reality, and I'm going to argue today, embrace it, and turn what today is a strategic vulnerability into enormous long-standing advantage. As Stanley Hoffman would want me to do, there are three parts to my talk. First of all, I want to discuss the political essence of cyber warfare and the implications for defending the United States. Secondly, I want to talk about how Russia and other potential adversaries are likely to conduct information operations in alignment with cyber warfare, and especially use social media to maximize the effects of their attack. And third, I'd like to propose some recommendations for remedying the vulnerabilities that we have today. Turning to the first item, which is the nature of cyber warfare, let's use the recent attacks on the electoral system as a way of understanding the broader phenomenon and why we've been missing the boat in terms of cyber warfare. There's a triple threat that was exemplified by attacks during the election. First of all, attacks on voting machines, vendors, supporting software. Let's call it attacking hardware and systems that enable voting to occur. Secondly, there's attacks on data, that is, manipulating the vote in order to help elect a particular candidate to the disadvantage of another. Efforts to corrupt data. So first, hardware, software. Second, corrupt data. And then third, Russia attacked democratic governance and our institutions of democracy. The Internet Research Agency in St. Petersburg bought thousands of ads from Facebook in order to influence the election, influence American voters, and let me put a fine point on it, were smart enough to understand that buying ads in Wisconsin, a swing state, would have outsized effects on the election at a time when Hillary Clinton's campaign didn't understand that. She didn't go to Wisconsin. The Internet Research Agency did. So that's the degree of sophistication that we're looking at here, both in terms of understanding the target, i.e. us, and use of sophisticated weapons to achieve political ends. And that's really what all three of these attack vectors have in common. Attacks on equipment and software, attacks on the integrity of data, and then attacks on democratic institutions. They're politically motivated. The objective is political, and that's going to be the same case when, not if, adversaries attack the power grid. It's going to have a political goal, and political issues are going to inform the way that the attack occurs. Let me talk a little bit about the nature of what's new about these attacks. In some ways, there's nothing new about Russia launching politically motivated against attacks against the United States, because all of us, most of us, experienced the Cold War, where propaganda, both by the United States and by the Soviet Union, was ubiquitous. So the CIA caused AIDS, right? All the famous reporting, disinformation that the Soviet Union employed, again, in order to win this long war. What's dramatically changed is technology. Today, there is a dependence on social media. So many Americans get their news now from Facebook, from other social media sources compared in the past. That's a dependence that didn't exist before and that Russia and other potential adversaries exploit. Secondly, of course, they have very sophisticated tools to use in social, to transform social media into a weapon. And there's one more thing that bears mentioning. In the Cold War and today, in the case of the efforts to corrode democratic institution, Russia is playing a very long game. We need to get ready for the long game. We need a new equivalent of NSC 68 to get ready for that long game, including in information operations. But I'd suggest today there's something new also, and that is possibility that in a crisis, cyber warfare could be paired up with information war in ways that would be new and different. And I'd say we should apply the same typology in cyber warfare, cyber attacks on the grid, that we would use in the case of elections. So first of all, there's going to be attacks on hardware and software. So right now I'm studying how Russia or other potential adversaries could attack protective relays, other protection devices in the power grid in order to create cascading failures that look a little bit like the big blackout caused by natural hazards in 2003 in the past. So you've got attacks on hardware and supporting software, emergency management systems. You've got the possibility of attacks on data. So PMUs, phasor measurement units, everything that the grid operators today use to gather data in order to control power flows in the power grid, all that data vulnerable to corruption. So we should anticipate that equivalent type of attack on the power grid. But also, we should expect that those attacks on the power grid will be structured to achieve political effects. Now let's talk about what that might look like. Let's talk about information operations in a cyber attack. Power outage caused by natural hazards have revealed the vulnerability of American citizens to false reporting, especially on crisis on social media, and the disruptive effects this false reporting can have on crisis response operations. So some of you may remember during Hurricane Katrina, there were reports that some of the locals were shooting at Coast Guard helicopters above New Orleans. Those reports were total BS. They were false, right? Although the media picked them up, including the mass media. Totally false. What happened? Coast Guard and private helicopter operations stood down. Reports were false, but the effects on crisis management and support for life-saving, potentially power restoration operations, very destructive, very disruptive. So even false reporting can have a big effect. And false reporting continues. Now, my favorite in the recent series of hurricanes was the photograph that Fox News put up of alligators allegedly swimming up the streets of Houston, right, to attack the locals. Streets are flooded, alligators are coming, maybe even sharks. Again, total BS. Ha, ha, ha. The false reports that in a major shelter with a couple thousand people of it, that there were shootings and attacks, not so funny, caused panic in that shelter. Less amusing. The key dynamic here is false social media, and then mass media picks it up with potentially seriously disruptive effects. Now let's get to your excellent question. Who's doing this? Again, remember in the context of elections, I mentioned this nice outfit in St. Petersburg, the Internet Research Agency. They specialize in this. In fact, they've already given us a test drive of what they might be able to do in the context of future cyber attacks. In St. Mary's Parish, Louisiana, on September 11th, 2014, hundreds of Twitter accounts began to repost allegations from eyewitnesses that at a local chemical facility, there'd been a toxic release of chemicals equivalent to Bhopal. Again, total BS, but done with such sophistication. So a false Facebook page showing alleged fire at the chemical facility very rapidly appeared. Major mass media picked it up, retweeting, and screenshots of CNN homepages available. Even a Wikipedia site stood up very, very quickly during the day, inciting panic in the entire parish. Traced back, thanks to the intelligence community, to St. Petersburg. Folks, this is a dry run of what we can anticipate, sort of. Now, let me argue against myself. Just as I'm sure that we have not seen what Russia's cyber attacks will look like by virtue of having watched Ukraine, I'm sure we haven't seen what social media looks like. You don't want to reveal your crown jewels. You don't want to reveal your best TTPs, your best ways of attacking, because then we could take countermeasures against it. So the attack on St. Mary's Parish for information warfare, you ain't seen nothing yet. No doubt Russia and other potential adversaries are saving their most sophisticated attack vectors for when they really need them, so we'll be caught by surprise. That's what's coming. St. Mary's, but much, much more. What are the consequences of such attacks? Well, clearly, if it's a cyber attack on the power grid, you could have disruption of power management and restoration operations. I mean, which utility worker is going to want to go into St. Mary's Parish or Secaucus, New Jersey, or the Houston Shipping Canal region if they know there's a Bhopal toxic cloud emerging? Let me give you a better example, one that I'm working on now in my follow-on to the study that I provided as a read-ahead. It is possible that just as the Metcalf substation down on 101 here got shot up, you know, if people are willing to shoot up transformers, they might shoot a utility worker coming to repair that transformer, right? Or a replacement transformer moving at 3 miles an hour on a huge truck down 101. Even if it isn't true, false media reports that they're active shooters shooting up utility workers, wow. Wow, that is a different planet for grid management and restoration operations, especially if you think that in a cyber attack, we're going to solve the problem by forward deploying workers to to all the substations so they can operate things manually instead of with ICS and energy management systems. So disruption of operations equivalent to that which occurred with the Coast Guard helicopters in Katrina, except done intentionally. Secondly, public panic. You know, it really is bad if power goes out for a long time. People want to know when the power is going to get turned back on. People in Puerto Rico today would really like to have electricity. And there's some things that are pretty good about Puerto Rico, horrific as it is. You know, it rains a lot in Puerto Rico. There's plenty of groundwater. So you haven't had the catastrophic effects of loss of water and wastewater service that you might have if all electricity were lost to the pumping stations that provide all the water here in Palo Alto and all the sewerage and sanitation services on which we depend in order to live without dysentery. So people really are going to panic if they think the power grid is down, if the power grid maybe goes down repeatedly because adversaries using advanced persistent threats. The cascading failures, the threat to public health and safety will cause enormous political concern. And guess what? The Russians or other adversaries are going to be pouring gasoline on that fire through attacks on social media. Why? In order to put political pressure on the leadership of the United States government to back down in whatever crisis precipitated the cyber conflict in the first place. Adversary is going to try to make the Situation Room in the White House a really bad place to be. That's why Russians want to escalate to de-escalate, right? That's the MO. So let's get ready for it, and let's get ready for the use of information warfare to magnify the effects of cyber attacks on the power grid. I want to talk now about recommendations, because there's lots that we can do. It's not gloom and doom. Let me start always with my favorite subject, which is don't be stupid, right? There are some really great ideas out there that we totally bonehead to actually adopt. My favorite, and I owe this to Emmy Probasco, my friend at the Applied Physics Laboratory, Johns Hopkins, let's see if we can avoid establishing a ministry of truth, right? Don't become Winston Smith, right? Not good. There's a tendency in, that we've seen in international politics of nations developing national security institutions that kind of look like each other's. Russia is going down the path of totalitarian control over social media. China's built a great firewall. I don't think these are good models for the United States. I don't think that centralizing federal government control over the messages that American people get is a good way to go, because I do believe we're in the long competition over values. And I do believe in the long haul we're going to win, but emulating totalitarian means of controlling social media and communications and the flow of information, that would be suicidal for us. We've got to find another way of doing it. Now, there are things that can be done. FEMA right now is a great webpage you can look up. False rumors from the hurricanes. And they got a list of 30 false social media reports about, you know, sharks swimming up the street in San Juan or whatever it is. You can Google it. They explain what the posts say, why they're wrong, etc. So there's the bare beginnings in the federal government recognizing that we're in a contested information environment. Although, as far as I know, there's no evidence that Russia or any other adversary has attempted to exploit the recent series of hurricanes. But there are some things that the federal government should do, and I'm happy to talk about that in the Q&A period. There's also some things that we might want to consider adopting that our adversaries have adopted. Let me argue against myself for a moment. I said we shouldn't do what China and Russia are doing. China's done something very interesting this year. The People's Liberation Army has established a new strategic support force within the PLA that combines together all of the cyber and network operations that used to be in PL3, together with information warfare capabilities, and especially the psychological warfare mission. They're putting together the hardware, the software, the core cyber attack things on which we fixate way too much, together with psychological and information operations. Let's talk more about that in the Q&A period, about what the implications might be for reorganizing the federal government in a way that will allow us to play defense more effectively. But ultimately, this is not a responsibility for the federal government to take the lead. We need the private sector to step up to the plate. You'll remember in my bottom line up front, I made the argument that we have industry and the private sector playing a central role in national security that is unprecedented in American history. Let me start with the power industry. You know, if you're an investor-owned utility, you're the CEO of Exelon or Southern California Edison, what are you there for? You're there to provide reliable electric service at a fair price and maximize investor returns, right? You ought to make sure your investors get paid because you're an investor-owned utility. You did not sign up to defend the United States against cyber attack. You are not supposed to be fighting PLA-3 or whatever the new organization is. But you are. But you are. That is a new role. And we need to think about what that role ought to be. And I believe we ought to embrace it. Let me give you an example of a way ahead. Right now, today, the Electricity Subsector Coordinating Council, the ESCC, has built very sophisticated and well-thought-out playbooks, they're called, for strategic communications with the American people on when power is going to be restored, other kinds of issues that would occur also in the context of a cyber attack. Now, obviously, communications in a cyber event are a lot more difficult for communications than against a hurricane because misinformation by the adversary. But there's a foundation on which to build. These playbooks could be adapted in an intelligent and informed way. So I think there's a way ahead there. What's puzzling to me is how we're going to put Facebook, Google, and especially Twitter on the front lines of national security. Here my ideas are only quarter-baked, I'll confess, but let me give you my ideological bias. Again, fighting the long fight, the wrong thing to do is have government take over of social media companies so they can be integrated into a traditional national security construct. We're going to win the long game, just as we did in the Cold War, because of the innovative essence and ultimately the patriotism of women and men in the private sector. We need to find a way of leveraging that, of capitalizing on the leadership role of social media in this new battlefield, rather than adopting the practices and totalitarian strategies of our potential adversaries.
You've been listening to World Class from the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies at Stanford University. If you like this episode, even if it made you want to crawl into a hole wearing a tinfoil hat, please leave us a rating and a review. It helps other people find the show. And be sure to subscribe to stay up to date on what's happening in the world and why.